Hello, everyone. This is Rusty Gilligan from Mac in Trouble, and you're listening to Superheroes Speak.
When creative forces collide, they do great things. Head Shrinkers Press believes in the fusion of creative forces, the typed electrons and ballpoint scrawls that fuel our writing, every stylus that glides across glass, every pen trailing ribbons of India ink, the explosion of colors splashed freshly on finished pages. When those forces come together, they make great comics. They make Head Shrinkers Press comics. Every day, we wake up with only one thing in mind, to bring you the absolute best titles our team can create. From the outermost reaches of the galaxy to the Badlands of the West, inside every Head Shrinkers title, you're sure to be going on an adventure you won't soon forget. Let us show you what happens when creative forces collide. Visit us right now at www.headshrinkerspress.com or come chat with us on our Facebook page. Head Shrinkers Press, where creative forces collide.
Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor. More powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak, and I'm your host Dave.
And John.
And Ben's off this week, of course. It's an interview. No, sorry. Inside joke. No, this week we have actually three very special guests with us. We have a comic book team that consists of a father and a son and an artist, and they're here to tell us about their book Shepherd, plus how they got interested in doing comics. So first we have Andre. I knew I was going to do it.
You are awesome, Dave. You are so Andrea. Awesome. Andrea Molinari.
Molinari.
Good job.
Roberto Molinari.
Yep.
And Ryan Showers. How are you guys doing?
Doing solid.
Same.
So we'll start with the father.
Andrea, you can
Andrea,
do it.
Yes.
Practice.
Yes. Start with Andrea. So tell us a little bit about Shepherd and where it came about from.
Well, in a nutshell, it was a nightmare plan and extremely powerful. I woke up, you know, heart pounding, beating out of my chest. And it was a nightmare that I had, that I dreamed that my son, Roberto, my co-writer, that he had died of a drug overdose. And it was, you know, incredibly intense. I say this to people all the time. It's like when I have a dream, I'm sure like most people, you know, it kind of a couple minutes after the dream, after you wake up, it's, you know, it's like sand going through your fingers. And it's gone. But this dream was very different. It stuck with me. I woke up very upset, and I talked to my wife about it, and she was horrified. You know, I mean, understandably so. And then I told Roberto, and Roberto thought, "Hell, this is really cool." You know, I was like, "What the hell? It's not cool. You died of a friggin' overdose. This is not cool. This is decidedly the opposite of cool."
He was obviously he was pretty upset about it.
Oh, I was extremely upset, but he was. He was thought it was cool. He was like, "Dad, you need to really write this story down." And I was like, "Oh, you're kidding. I had lots of work to do with my job and research and articles and all this stuff. And there was just no time for such a thing." And but he pestered the hell out of me, absolutely pestered the hell out of me about it. And finally, it was in June of 2011, I had a break in my schedule where I knew that I actually had a couple of months off, and he got wind of that. I made the mistake of mentioning it. And he was like, "Dad, this is your opportunity. Write this," you know, and he just wouldn't let up. So I'm like, "Okay, I will give it a try. I'm fully expecting that this is not going to work. This is going to flame out, and then I will at least say that I tried and get him off my back." But I started to try to write this thing, and it just flowed out of me like water. And I'm talking with him as we're working on this and getting it down. And you know, I just was blown away how easy it was. Inside a month, it was done. You know, five issues worth of a story done. And I thought, well, okay, I've got it written down now. He surely will leave me alone. No, he did not leave me alone. Mm. He pestered me. He's like, "Dad, we need to get this made into a comic book." And I'm like, oh, yeah, because the guy next door makes comic books, right? I'm like, all of this. I know nothing of this. I read comic books. That's all I do. I have no idea how to make them. And so he just, you know, pestered me, and we started looking online. And eventually we found a company called Scattered Comic Studios out of Sacramento, California. And it's run by a gentleman named Jason Dewey, who is an artist himself and a writer, and of course the publisher of you know, comic. But this site is that where you can go and actually pick out. It has like a stable of artists and colorists, and they do their lettering. And basically, they're a one-stop shopping place where you can come and put together an art team to do a book. And of course, that's how we met Ryan. So that kind of gets you to where we launched from there. This would be about September of 2011.
Okay.
Cool. Oh gosh, 2011. Holy cow.
No, I know.
Been a while.
So it was Roberto's idea to turn it into a comic book.
Absolutely.
I had originally intended, like when he first told me about it, like I had originally intended that he would write it as a novel, because that's like what he had written before with the other book. But then after a while, it kind of became obvious that it would be better, you know, in a different format.
Mm. Okay. And did you have a drug problem that your father should have been worried about?
Actually, pretty straight edge. So, I mean, obviously now that I'm over 21, I do drink occasionally. But other than that, no, I'm not really into the drugs thing. So kind of a baseless fear, if you ask me.
Okay.
did going through creating this comic and getting it all out, say, help you work through this fear that you had?
Well, I don't know that I had a fear any more than any father does with their kids. I mean, you want, of course, your kids to grow up, you know, healthy and happy, and you know, and just be okay. Now, I didn't realize that I had a fear. That's kind of what really jarred me about this, because, I mean, at the time, Roberto was always an athlete. He was a baseball player and a good one. And he also was, so he was, you know, he wasn't the kind of kid that I would have pegged with that. And for the most part, you know, his friends were really good kids. And, you know, they, to my knowledge, at least, they weren't involved in that. So it wasn't like I had reason, you know. So it was very unsettling to have this dream come out of nowhere, come out of the blue, you know, and I didn't know what to make of it. I didn't know if it was like some kind of a premonition of things to come. That's what was really, I guess, probably the most unsettling.
You know, I've said this for a while with dreams, like dreams or nightmares. I think that sometimes it's not like your subconscious, like whether you take it in through movies or whatever, or just your imagination, sometimes, especially in the form of nightmares, it'll take everything that you're aware of and make a crazy mashup, and like it's not, you know, it's not really coming from you in a way. It's just like what you're aware of, and can give you some really bad results.
I think that's
or
fair to say.
Or awesome ones. Yeah,
I definitely think that's true. So then, you know, Ryan, since you spoke up, it kind of sounds like when they had pretty much had a good idea of the script when they presented it to you. How much influence did you have in the style and design of the art on it?
That was, I mean, basically when working with Scattered, like when a writer comes to you, they have a written description, and then you just use your imagination to go from there, send it to them. They approve it or they don't. This was a little different with this project, because there was actually a fellow that did the first issue. There was a guy before me. Okay. And so there was already kind of a visual style. And I did my own take on that. We're not showing screenshots. He wasn't such like a business suit. Like there was no tie, there was no suit. It was more tattered and like stuff wrapped around his wrists and whatever. But we eventually went back to pretty much what the original artist did. So I kind of already had a look to go for that was already drawn out for me, just to draw it the way that I would. So, yeah.
Okay. But did you feel like you got to play a little bit, you know, and present your style to it, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. Like, I was drawing it from scratch. So, I mean, reading the script, there was definitely places where I had to extend the panels further, or I had to. I would talk to Andrea about extending panels further, just because what the script was introducing really needed more space to make it flow and make it coherent to the reader. So I definitely got to do some fun nuances there when they got approved. So
cool. So Andrea, I did a little research. You have a doctorate.
Yes, I do.
So I mean, I'm kind of like, I'm sure our listeners are curious at why someone with a doctorate, you know, again, would do a comic book as opposed to a novel if they were, you know. Do you have a love of comic books?
Absolutely. From the time I was a little child, you know, I grew up in the area. I was born in 1967. And so I kind of grew up in the shadow of the Adam West, Burt Ward, Batman kind of thing. And then, of course, you know, O'Neill and Adams, Batman, Green Arrow, that sort of thing. You know, it was very much a part of my childhood. And I can remember going to the drugstore and my dad, you know, giving me a quarter and letting me buy up, you know, a comic book. And it didn't take the whole quarter at first anyway. And, yeah, I know that really changed. That was, you know, and I used to love Brave and Bold was my favorites, because if you could only buy one comic book, well, you want to get one that has multiple superheroes in it. Of course, JLA, you know, that sort of thing. I always loved Daredevil. I grew up Catholic, and of course, I loved the fact that Daredevil was Catholic. It was cool to have a Catholic superhero, and just, you know, that was always a part of my childhood. And then, you know, I got older, I kind of grew out of it in my high school years, and then I got to college, and I had a buddy of mine who said, you know, you like Batman, right? And I said, yeah, and this is in the 80s, and he said, I got something I want you to read, and he said, this is a Batman book, I want you to read it. Of course, it's probably what you think it is. It's, you know, Frank Miller's Dark Knight Returns.
Yes.
And I read the thing, and it blew me away. Because you got to keep in mind, I had grown up on, you know, Adam West and Burt Ward, and you know, the 1970s Batman comics and detective, where he's consulting with Commissioner Gordon and talking to the police officers on the scene and that kind of thing. And now suddenly you have this vigilante who's, they want to kill this guy. I mean, they hate him, they fear him, but it made sense. It made real sense of Batman, for the first time, maybe for me. And I was hooked. And then I would say from that point on, it was always a pursuit of something that would be like that. Was like a drug, and you were always looking for something that would be as close to that experience as possible. And sometimes you find it, and most of the time you didn't. But it really kind of rekindled that, and it brought me back in a big way. And then of course over time, you know, just expanding what you're reading, not just DC and Marvel, but reading some of the other things that are out there in the independent world and smaller press world. Image and IDW and Boom and smaller yet than that. And it just, you know, it kind of went from there. But I never, if you were asking me if I ever said, oh, I want to be a comic writer, that was never on the plan. You know, I mean, you don't get a PhD to go do that. So,
right.
On that note, Andrea, I've never actually wanted to be a comic book artist, so I share that sentiment.
Okay.
So I can understand accidentally, you know, falling into, hey, I've got an idea. Oh, wait, it became a comic. How did that happen? But what did you just like fall in a box of crayons and become an artist? I don't understand how that.
man, I've been drawing. I was home. Go ahead. Say again, you were breaking up, Andrea.
I'm just saying that I think there was radiation involved in those crayons, Ryan.
I love
uranium green.
I love illustration, but I don't read comic books. I do read some manga, not so much these days. And when I do, I'm very loosely tied to the story. Not that I don't like a good story, but like I'm obsessed with illustration. I'm obsessed with cool images. My personal art, when I want to sit down and do something for myself and sometimes sell it if someone wants to buy it, like it's just a one-off image. Like it can be on a canvas, watercolor paper. Like watercoloring is my favorite medium, pretty much. The reason I ended up at Scattered Comics was because I was working at an IHOP in a small small town in Texas, and my girlfriend at the time knew Jason Dubey, the owner of Scattered Comic Studios, and hit him up, said, "Hey, my boyfriend draws. He needs more work. He's, you know, he's not getting his artist needs fulfilled out here in the middle of nowhere." So
she was just killing two birds with one stone with that.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I started working for him and started doing comic books, and I had to start paying more. Like, I have a decent manga collection, and I had to really start doing research on paneling and like what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. Just like self research on what makes something catch your eye and how to follow. And, you know, I don't know that I ever really got it down real well, but yeah, whatever.
That's the second time we've heard from an, well, the second time that I remember, because, you know, I've got the memory of goldfish, but the second time I remember an artist talking about how they went from just like single stills to comic book and having to go to panel format and learn how to do different angles and that sort of thing. So, and you self-taught that whole
So, okay, but since you've gotten into comics, working in comics, have you gone back and read anything? Like, have you read The Dark Knight Returns?
No, I'm actually not. I hope this doesn't sound offensive. I'm not into superheroes. Like, I don't. Like, I actually hate Superman. Like, I strongly dislike Superman. And I'm just not drawn to superheroes. Like,
well, then you should be reading The Dark Knight Returns if you don't like Superman.
No. He should be reading One Punch Man, but that's it.
I've heard that's a sweet anime. One Punch Man.
The manga is really good too, and cool. It is about the anti-Superman. So.
Okay. I mean, Batman is one of the coolest guys just because he doesn't have powers. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I don't have, like, super well-developed thoughts. I'm just not drawn to it. Like, I can't really articulate my opinion. I'm just not drawn to it.
So, but ghosts are okay.
Yeah. They're cool.
Roberto, how about you? Where do you stand in fandom for comics?
Obviously, I like comic books. I mean, in my case, anyway. I would say I read them pretty early on, mostly because that was, like, my understanding is that's what Dad used to get me into reading. he read comics books to get me into reading at all, like, as a small child. And then he kind of, you know, bought comics for me consistently, you know, while I was growing up. And then around, I don't know, like, what do you think, like, maybe 9 to 10 years old, I started, like, asking for, like, parts of his collection to read.
Sweet.
You brought him up right.
Yeah. I mean, he had, like, the thing is, my dad's got, like, the long boxes of, like, a lot of different runs. Like, one of the ones that I read when I was fairly young is Robin. I don't remember who wrote it, because it's been a long time. Chuck Dixon. Yeah. Well, there you go. So Chuck Dixon's Robin.
Tim Drake version, basically, of Robin.
The one with the original red Robin cover, and they had like five different covers. I've got that one.
And that was one example of the runs that I read from. And then it kind of, I don't know, my taste kind of changed as I got older, like towards, like, I was really into Invincible until I left for college. And then, I mean, basically the second I left for college, I stopped having as much access to comics just because I was away, like, obviously not living with my dad anymore. So whereas before I could just be like, "Hey, Dad, hand this stuff over," and then he would just give it to me and I would read it. Now it's a lot more difficult to actually get my hands on this stuff. So at this point, it's like, I just read whatever he sends to me.
Okay. You know, I mean, there is Amazon.
That's true.
And of course, you know, Marvel.com, you can get the unlimited subscription and, you know, read it on your iPad whenever you want.
Yeah, we do have that. That is an incredible thing. I mean, I am stunned that DC hasn't copied that. DC always seems just a beat slow with this stuff. The thing that Berto and I are the biggest fans of Mike Mignola. Basically, anything Mignola writes, I think he's the best writer out there, bar none. And I think that 250, 300 years from now, people will be reading him and probably no one else that's writing right now. Because I just think that he has, as someone who studied ancient literature, he's so plugged into folklore and these elements of the culture and mixing the legend and that sort of thing. I just think that's going to have a staying power to it.
Not to mention the art style. At least the Hellboy stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And of those, I would say of Mignola, my personal favorite, I can't speak for Barrow, my personal favorite is Baltimore. I just think Baltimore is unbelievable.
Baltimore is pretty raw.
Yeah. It's just, but Mignola is stupid talented, in my opinion. I just think he's, you know. And as for artists, other than my own Ryan, who I'm a huge fan of Ryan, I love David Mack. I think David Mack is the living end, and it comes of from an artistic standpoint. I just think he's amazing.
I'm writing that name down. I'm going to look it up.
Oh, yeah.
He's, David Mack. You know,
and again, one of the things I love about him is that he does watercolors, and I love Ryan's watercolors. I think Ryan is, when I see his watercolors, it's amazing. He's such a talent. Ryan is, I'm going to embarrass him by saying this, but Ryan is one of those guys that you just want to kick in the shin because he's so damn talented. Like,
thank you.
It's like, we're talking about him as a graphic artist, but you need to understand that this guy also designs and makes cosplay costumes and the props that go with them. Without blowing our horn too much, if you look at the Facebook page for the Shepherd, I actually put a lot of his stuff on there from his DeviantArt page, which is Score 6, right, Ryan? Score 6?
Yeah, I'm not too active online these days, but I'm still creating, but yeah. Yep.
Yeah, but he's just good at so many things. And like I said, he's irritating because he doesn't even know how talented he is. He's not aware. It's like it comes.
Oh, gosh.
You know, he's one of those guys. So, like I said, you want to kick him in the shins because he's just that good.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Nice. So, the Shepherd, how many parts? Because it's a graphic novel now, right? So, how many?
It is.
How many issues is it?
5 issues, and it's on Comixology, Drive-Thru Comics, Google Books. There's a bunch of different formats that it's on, but it is 5 issues. Caliber Comics, our publisher, and by the way, they were the original publishers of The Crow, and I'm proud to say that there are a lot of major league creators that got their start at Caliber. Brian Michael Bendis, Ed Brubaker, David Mack, the guy that I was talking about, Guy Davis, there's a bunch, just a list of them. And our publisher is Gary Reed. A lot of really fine talent that comes out of there. I'm hoping that we can live up to that. Their focus is very much digital. Now, they do things through, you know, Diamond and distribution like that. And the Shepherd has been, by the way, distributed. We're very proud to say we've been distributed through Diamond.
Yeah, very
that's,
cool.
That's a big deal. Because it's hard for a small, you need to understand, it's extremely hard for a small press to get space in Diamond simply because, you know, the amount of money that Diamond can make off of, like, a, you know, using that space for a bigger press, you know, IDW or Marvel or DC or Boom or somebody like that, Image, you know, they're going to make a lot more money off that. Whereas opposed to Caliber, which is a smaller press, it just doesn't have the punch that some of these bigger guys do. So It was a big honor for us. And in November, we were part of their previews. We're really proud of that. Really grateful, you know, honored that, that Diamond saw us, looked at us and saw us as worthy of being included. So,
I didn't even know the gravity of that, not being a comic book reader until that happened. You know, like, that's really sweet. Like, I brought it up to a friend of mine that reads comics. I said Diamond, and they just, like, snapped into the conversation right away. Like, they already knew what I was trying to barely talk about because I didn't really know what I was talking about. So,
see, this is what I'm talking about with Ryan. It's like, you know, he does these one-offs, and then he stumbles into comics, and oh, by the way, does the artwork that propels us into Diamond. This is what I'm talking about. This is why we all want to get in the chance.
Oh, gosh.
Nice.
So is there a plan to do any more issues, maybe do a second story?
It's already done, David. Berto and I actually this summer finished the sequel, which is called The Path of Souls, The Shepherd, The Path of Souls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 6 issues, and Ryan has signed on. He's not going to be the only artist, but he's going to be one of the, he's going to start it off, and he's going to do one of the story arcs. It's kind of an anthology collection. And Barrow and I actually have charted out stories for arcs 3 and 4 already. So we are very much serious about taking this thing and running.
Yeah, the plan is, like I've said this to Dad before, like plan is to to work on this until we're both dead.
I'm hoping to get there before him. So,
well, if there's a rift, you know, that kind of complicates things.
It's a story that you think about it. The character exists in the afterlife primarily.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so he deals with souls. So why this is incredible in terms of potential? Anyone who has ever lived in any culture is a potential, story for us.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, in the story arc that Ryan is going to be doing with us, it takes place in a place called the Seam. The Seam is that middle ground between heaven and earth. And it's the place where souls transition into the afterlife. And some of those souls struggle with that transition process. And the first of them, of course, is the shepherd himself. Lawrence is how we meet the Seam, and he can't move on. He's worried about the situation with his son, who dies of a drug overdose, and he goes after him into the Seam to try to rescue his son and can't find him. And that the first story arc is that working itself out. This second story arc that Ryan and I are just on the verge of starting is that it's a place in the Seam that focuses on the souls of soldiers who have died in combat. And the basic idea is this. If people who fight in combat, many of them, they come back and they're suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder, okay, where they're basically reliving the events of the combat that they've suffered. My question that kind of provoked all this is, what if somebody falls in combat? When they get to the afterlife, do they suffer from the equivalent of post-traumatic stress disorder? And my answer in the story is yes, that these souls have not been able to resolve those issues that were surrounding their death. And so we are telling the story of four different soldiers, all from different cultures and time periods, who are suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder in the afterlife. And that's what this Path of Souls is all about. The four characters that we're doing a Confederate soldier that Bertel wrote all by himself, who died at Fredericksburg in 1862. Nice. We're dealing with a U.S. Marine who died at Fallujah in 2004, the Second Battle of Fallujah in November 2004. We're dealing with a French soldier who fought under Napoleon and died in the wake of the Battle of the Siege of Jaffa in March 1799. And the fourth character is the character that Ryan is doing, is a Huron Indian by the name of Sandakwa, who dies in the Huron-Iroquois War of the late 1640s.
Oh, wow.
So that's, other than that, we're doing well. But Ryan, the reason why we wanted to do this is Ryan kind of said to me, he didn't want to do all the artwork for this next story arc because he really wanted to do his own colors and he wanted to be able to slow down. Mm. And,
go ahead, sorry.
Go ahead, Ryan. Go ahead.
I feel like for fresh listeners, like, we didn't really cover this. There was the colors for this, if anybody's looking this up or has it or whatever. I didn't do the colors for this stuff. This was Heather Beckel? Okay. For me to do a finished piece that's all my own, it takes a lot more time. And so a bite-sized piece of a story where I can do all the illustration, all the colors in watercolor, because I couldn't have watercolored the whole shepherd, considering the size alone. Just getting a small chunk of a story and getting to do art to color all inclusively is pretty exciting, actually.
And I gotta tell you, I'm excited to see what he's gonna do. He is, like I said, very talented, and his watercolors are so beautiful. And I think the Sandakwa story, the Huron story, they're actually they actually call themselves Wendat. They're known as the Huron. So often you'll see them referred to as the Wendat Huron. I think this is going to be a very unique story that will be very good for him because it's going to be set in the North Woods. The Wendat tribes lived originally in what is modern day Ontario. And of course, that's why the Lake Huron is named after them, because they would fish that lake. And in fact, Sandakwa actually is a member of they call themselves the People of the Bear, which was like a small group of the larger tribe of the Wendat.
Sounds like you guys really did your research on this, which...
Oh, yeah. For this particular story, I think I told Ryan this, is that it actually is based on... There was a man by the name of Gabriel Sagnard, who was, of all things, a Franciscan brother who was a missionary, and he wrote a diary of his experience meeting the Wendat Huron people in the 1617, something like that.
Well, you're asking the people here. Nobody else is going to know that.
Yeah. And he actually, Gabriel Sagnard, that Franciscan brother, actually provides the first known dictionary. It's a French Wendat Huron dictionary of their language. And of course, in his diary, yeah, it's extremely cool. He describes what their culture is like. Of course, mind you, all this is through the eyes of a white man and the prejudice, you know, that is time period. But even with that prejudice, the culture that comes across the Wendat Huron are amazing people. I mean, they're really a fascinating culture. And so I'm just really excited to see what somebody like Ryan with his talent is going to do. It's just a really amazing story. And of course, the Iroquois are actually cousins. They're actually related to the Huron, and there's all this bad blood between them. They hate each other, and they fight these series of wars, and they actually they kidnap and capture people and then take those people and put them into their tribe. They call them technically adoption wars, where they replenish their losses in combat by adopting the prisoner of war that they take. It's a really fascinating
just like your voice just totally dropped out there for a second.
Sorry about that. I'm a complete geek, I guess, for all this. But so anyway, that's way more.
basically, what he's saying is no pressure.
Yeah, no pressure.
Hello everyone, Outpouring Comics is proud to announce Doodle. This new title will feature head sketches of various celebrities, amongst others, in the unique style of Caleb Temple. This 56-page picture book is set to release on March 18th. Take advantage of our pre-order discount at outpouringcomics.storeenvy.com today. And while you're there, check out our other great titles at www.outpouringcomics.com. Thank you!
What, besides just like getting to have full control of like the pages that I'll be doing, I'm stoked that I'm doing this Indian like chapter because it's a lot of nature stuff and that's more my vibe. Like, honestly, I probably shouldn't say this, but I hate drawing cars, like real life cars. Like, I'd rather make up pretend ones. And like, I hate drawing buildings and like regular houses, like all that stuff. I can do it, but it's so boring. So like, I'm stoked about doing like pretty much nature, organic looking stuff. That's more my vibe.
So I just want to get this straight. So what you want to do then is a full painted issue.
It's how many pages, Andrea?
Yeah, it's going to be about that. Is that he is doing the story of Sandakwa of the six is basically like one of the six issues, but he's also doing the introductory material as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually up the whole story is 164 pages, this new story arc we're working on. And he's going to be doing about somewhere between 34 and 36 pages because the Sandakwa story is about 30 on its own. And then he's got another five at the beginning. And then there's some selected panels here and there. So, yeah. But the big thing with this is that we are switching artists. We have three different artists that are working with us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're doing each of these four stories has a different artist. One of the artists is actually doing two. But, you know, part of it is in this place, in this seam, these different soldiers don't realize that the guys around them are not from their same time period and culture. So, for example, this Sandakwa, there are scenes where he, as a Wendat Huron Indian, is fighting alongside the French Napoleonic soldier, and they don't realize that they're not the same culture. For example, the Wendat, when he looks at the Frenchman, he sees him as one of the French explorers of his time period, which is common at that time. There are Frenchmen that they know, and they they work in concert with. And so he thinks that this Frenchman is actually of his time, when in fact the Frenchman is, you know, 150 years down the line before he fights and dies. So it's their ability to understand each other. It's like when they see each other, they see each other as like themselves or of their time period. But each one of them is fighting side by side, and the enemies that they face are their projections of their own fears and anxieties and the things that are they're still carrying from the events that were related to their death.
And that idea is something that basically Andrea told me about in the first issue too. It's why he sees his dad as he sees Legio as the monster when it's really his son. His dad he sees young. Is that or
yes, yeah. He sees his dad first as old. That one of the themes in this all these stories is that what you see isn't always what you get. That your perception is, in many times in the spiritual things, not quite in sync with what is reality.
Okay. So I need to ask this. You know, this the overall story arc, you know, and then taking it to soldiers with post-traumatic stress disorder, it's very dark, you know, when you really think about it. And you're a teacher of early Christian literature, is that correct?
Yeah.
Do your students know about the comic, and what do they think of it?
Well, my students do know about it, and I've had a tremendous level of support. Of course, they're initially shocked. You know, it just depends on which students they're talking about. But I've had a lot of support from it. And you're right, the story is a dark story, but it's also extremely hopeful. The subtitle for the first story arc is The Shepherd Apokatastasis, and that's a Greek word for restoration. And basically, the idea is that this concept from early Christianity is that in the end, everyone will be saved. And it doesn't mean that it's easy, that process of salvation is easy, but no one will be lost, that there is no one lost to hell, that in the end, God finds a way of redeeming and restoring everyone. And that's kind of what I'm basing it on, is this whole theology that teaches that no one is going to be lost.
Cool. You should have a discussion with the people from the Westboro Baptist Church. But anyway.
Get along.
Seriously. Seriously.
Yeah, because that would just be a waste of time.
It actually dates.
Right, Roberto? Agreed.
It actually dates all the way to the late second, early third century. And starts with a Christian theologian by the name of Origen. It's the greatest biblical scholar. time, and has kind of survived even to modern Christianity, but it's often misunderstood.
Yes, no, I
it doesn't mean you get a free pass. I don't want to give the impression that
right
our stories, it's not a free pass. The souls do not get a free pass. It's like you're forced to deal with the stuff that you need to deal with.
Yes,
but it isn't God saying to you, oh, you stay here until you get this done. It's your soul working this out. And when you're ready, when you are ready, then you move on. Not that somebody else is telling you you're ready or you're not ready, but when you have worked this out in your own time, then you move on. You know?
And honestly, like, at least for the first book, it keeps it really vague. Like, there's no, like, evil, good. There's no God. There's no Satan. Like, it doesn't really – there's no heaven, no hell, not really. Like, there's just the earth and the seam and then something after. It keeps it pretty vague.
Right.
Just keeping your options open, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it sounds like you've got like so many plans for this. I hope you're not planning on having another nightmare anytime soon. Cause...
But I will tell you, that was the only one that I've ever had like that. I mean, obviously we all have nightmares over the course of our life. I never had anything like that before since.
Definitely feels like a big part of our future though. Like the whole shepherd thing is a general concept and adventure.
Well, these two are putting in crazy effort. Roberto and Andrea, like, they're just putting in tons of effort. Like, I've seen pictures of them at conventions and stuff, and, like, full posters, like, table spreads full of comics and posters, and, like, they're really putting in the effort. It's awesome.
So Roberto, is comic book writing something that you seriously want to pursue? Is that... where you're hoping your career path goes?
I mean, I'm going to be doing, like, I'm definitely going to be doing this one. Like I said, I'm going to be doing, like, working on the Shepherd until I'm dead. Like, whether that, you know, continues, like, only in comic book format, or if, like, we end up, like, writing a novel to go with it. Like, the thing is that we're not really nailed down to just doing comic books for the Shepherd, like, going forward. It could, like, easily translate over into other mediums without any problem. But for now, it seems like that's a really good way to present it. As for, like, what I'm planning to do writing other stuff, like, I've got other projects that I'm kind of bouncing around in my head that are probably going to be illustrated novels.
Oh, cool. So writing, definitely, then.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Cool. Have you thought about maybe writing a short that you could, you know, shoot, throw up on YouTube? And, you know, it's not only to show that it can translate to other mediums, but also help promote the book at the same time.
I actually wrote a short story. This would have been last year, right? Kind of at the time that I figured out that I wanted to be a writer, about a school shooting in a library, like at a college campus. And basically that is actually going to end up being incorporated into the Shepherd during the third story arc. But if I were going to do, like, if I were going to do something like that, like make a little, like a video of some sort, I would definitely use that particular short story as, basically the inspiration for the video.
Cool.
I don't want to cut you off or anything.
No,
probably,
go ahead.
That's probably the, like, in terms of something that's so short, because, like, it was only, like, it was, like, somewhere, like, 6 to 8 pages or something like that, and that's probably, like, some of the, like, the most powerful writing that I've done so far, I think. Like, I mean, you could ask Dad his opinion on it, but...
I agree.
Good. Cool. No, and I only, you know, I only bring it up because, our most recent guest before you guys, he was a comedian in an improv group and decided he wanted to get into producing and acting, and he just made his own short, you know, and he never filmed anything before. He just figured out how to do it and put it up, and you know, the rest is history. So, you know,
that's how it's done.
Exactly. Don't ever be afraid to try something new, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So all right, so we still got some time left. So we were talking about this before we started recording. So we'll get into a little bit now.
Oh no.
We're gonna go around the room with our three guests. What was the last superhero movie you saw?
And we can start with Roberto.
Actually, the last one I saw was Deadpool.
Okay.
Yeah, I just saw that in theaters.
Oh, you just saw it. Okay. What'd you think?
I thought it was entertaining. Like. It, like, the thing is, it's not, it's like a, it's not like a brains movie. It's all balls. Like, the entire,
exactly.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's nothing but, like, you know, action and, you know, sex and, like, all that kind of stuff. Like, and it was entertaining and it was funny and all that. But, like, it's not on the same level that I would say, like, Captain America the Winter Soldier was. Like, that,
right,
like,
right.
Captain America the Winter Soldier is, like, an objectively better movie. Whereas Deadpool was just really entertaining.
Okay, cool. And then Ryan, what were you saying the last one you saw?
I don't even know. The last movie I saw in a theater was Star Wars 2. I'm not actually a Star Wars fan. Like, I just went. Like, I got free tickets.
You're on the wrong podcast.
Dude, I know, right? Yeah, it was a good time. You know? I have no clue what last superhero movie I saw. It might have been Superman, and I don't like Superman, so. Yeah. I just went because my friends were going. Yep.
Well, that would be the way to get you there. yeah. Well, I won't speak on the Superman movie because, you know, I saw the original 77 version with Christopher Reeve, and there's nothing that comes close to that. So.
Yeah.
Bless he didn't snap any necks. Anyway. And Zimmer. So, okay, how about you, Andrea?
Well, I saw the Deadpool movie as well, and I mean, I enjoyed it quite a lot. I think Barrow's assessment is, I think, pretty fair. The only down, really, that, I mean, I think Ryan Reynolds is a great talent. He was definitely the right guy to play Deadpool, in my opinion. I wasn't real thrilled with Colossus. I would have liked to have seen a real person play Colossus, because I thought the CGI that they did of him was kind of disproportionate. Like, you know, mm-hmm. I wasn't really happy with how he was portrayed. And I would have liked to have seen like a human being who then went to that, switched into that metallic form, that, because they kind of give the impression that, you know, Colossus is always walking around in this, you know, kind of metallic form. And I just can't imagine that that would be the way that you would, if you had that ability, that you would do that, you know, that it would be the kind of thing that you would switch to when you needed to, you know, because it would make you so much heavier and it just would just not be, again, I'm being logical, but trying
see,
to.
See, but the thing is, banter like this is what makes, like, you did the same stuff with the Shepherd, which is awesome. Like, it made it so, like, there was gravity to what was going on and, like, logic to it, which I totally need, like, not to bring it back to the Shepherd, but no. Yeah, I think it's a great thing to have.
Yes, and I will totally agree with your assessment of Colossus, because if you listen to our review we did of Deadpool a few weeks ago, you know, that it's funny, the original actor who played Colossus in the X-Men movies, they did reach out to him to play the role and he turned it down. Wow. So they decided to then just go to the next level and create the CGI character, but it loses something, you know, in a movie that is trying to be funny, break the fourth wall, be over the top, but at the same time have a heart at the center, you know, with the love story. When you lose the humanity side of Colossus, it did, you know, it loses something.
I agree, yeah. And I couldn't believe that they couldn't find somebody to do that. I mean, it's just, I mean, there's got to be actors who would salivate at the opportunity to do that.
Yes.
I would say, and I know this isn't a movie, but I really loved the Netflix Daredevil. I just thought it was so good. I honestly, Berto mentioned the Winter Soldier, which I thought was my best movie up until this point. And I realized that Netflix is not a movie, but I think that Daredevil is the best superhero thing ever produced. And I would say in any format, I'd throw it out there. And that's saying a lot because you have the animated that I've included in that. But I just think it's an incredible take on Daredevil.
Well, wait, have you seen Jessica Jones yet?
I did. I saw it, and I will tell you, be honest with you, I was never emphasis comics on her. To me, this is going to be blasphemy, I'm sure, but the best thing about Jessica Jones was Luke Cage.
Ooh.
the bar fight when he's slapping those guys around.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Straight up boss. And I'm not anti. I want you to understand, I'm not anti, you know, I love women heroines, and they're, you know, to me, I just felt that she did so many stupid and illogical things that at a certain point I was like, well, okay, you kind of get what you pay for here, honey. I mean, you're doing so many dumb things here that, you know, this is going to go badly and a lot of people are going to get hurt. And, you know, because you have the ability to take this guy out who is, you know, who has mind control. And I'm telling you right now, as far as I'm concerned, there is no better superpower than mind control. I mean, seriously. You
can have somebody kind of prove that.
Yeah, they proved it, you know. And I mean, David Tennant, I thought was fabulous in that series. But I just felt that she, and maybe it was just the way that they wrote it, but they just kind of kept having her do too many stupid things to allow him, you know, like he's going to somehow get over this and then move on. No, I don't think that's going to work, you know. Pretty much it's going to end the way it ended.
Right, right. Yeah, there was no way. That's the only way it could have ended. But I also, I kind of feel that the love for, and Daredevil was amazing, don't get me wrong, but it might be the Catholic in you that loves that, loves Daredevil so much.
That's okay. That's all right. But I mean, and I'm not, you know, I'm not like, if you don't agree with me, you're, you know, somehow wrong or something like that. I'm just, that's my opinion. But I am definitely looking forward to Luke Cage coming out. And I got to tell you, I love Iron Fist. I can hardly wait to see that. I just think things are going to be awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to the new Daredevil coming out in a few days.
Yes.
Punisher, I think, will be very intriguing to see John Bernthal. I think that was a great call in terms of casting.
And it's a theme, like, I mean, they're definitely pushing the theme of, you know, Daredevil's one bad day away from becoming the Punisher, you know? And it's a theme I'd like to see Warner Brothers push it with Batman in a movie, but I don't know if we'll ever get there, you know? Now that
Batman's always been such a good guy.
You could do a Red Hood and kind of juxtapose Batman and Red Hood, because I think Red Hood, you know, Jason Todd's Red Hood is kind of Batman on a bad day.
Yeah. That's true. You know, but Ben Affleck, I don't know if we can we can trust him.
Honestly, I don't think that there is a good pick for Batman. Like, I've talked to my dad about this. Like, I don't think that you can pick anyone to actually do Batman alone. I think you have to have somebody play Bruce Wayne, and then you have to have somebody who actually knows how to play as Batman. Because, like, in the Batman Begins movies, they kind of, like, show that he was, like, training to become this really good fighter and stuff, and then the entire way through, he's just fighting like a bar brawler. Like, he just looks like he's kind of like slapping people around. And he's just running at them like from the front. He's not coming out of the shadows. He's not doing a bunch of like, you know, like just really knocking these guys around. He's taking hits he doesn't need to from people that are not nearly the fighter that he is. Like, you just need somebody like a Bruce Lee type that just can fight in the suit for the actor, because the actors are just not doing it.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, and it's not that hard to have someone else in the suit. I mean,
yeah.
Absolutely.
As long as they have the same chin, they're fine.
Well, they'll need prosthetics for that, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't even be that hard to fake it. Like,
I'm always amazed at the quality of the... If you look at the kung fu movies, like some of the Chinese kung fu movies, the quality of the fighting scene. And then you look at the quality of the fighting scenes with most of the superhero movies. Now, there are exceptions to that. Like, for example, the Winter Soldier. If you think about some of the fight scenes that Captain America does, they're really excellent. I mean, in my opinion. And then I think some of the fighting scenes in the Daredevil, the first Daredevil series, where he's like, for example, in the hallway fighting those Russian guys. That's an amazing brawl. Amazing brawl.
They should have won an award for that one.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. But what my point is that there are clearly actors and stuntmen who can do that in a very convincing way. So why not, especially for a character like Batman, who is defined not just as, he's not really a brawler so much if you think he's always outnumbered. So he has to fight range combat, first of all. He's going to thin the herd that way first. And then he's going to come in from the shadows. So he's going to always...
He beat Lady Shiva in hand-to-hand combat. Like, he needs to know, like, he needs to look like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good way of putting it. You know, he's got to be a one-punch kind of guy. I'm not standing here throwing three or four or five, exchanging blows with you. I'm going to hit you and put you down the first time I hit you. Oh. You know, I'm going to be using brass knuckles, so when I connect with your head, you are not going to get up, period. Because I can't afford for you to get up. I can't afford to put three or four or five hits into you because there are four others of you in the room.
That's right. Something that Frank Miller really captured.
Yes. Oh, I totally agree with that, you know. And, of course, One Punch Man, right, John?
Yeah. Actually, I was going to say Bruce Timm and his animation team really caught that, and it was the Animated Adventures of Batman and the later on the Superman stuff. Yeah. That's how they made him. They made him, he was always coming from the opposite direction where they thought he was coming from. He would put him down really quick. It was done, like you said, you know, more realistically where, you know, he's human. He can't afford to let the guy with the gun stay conscious.
Absolutely. He's not Superman that's going to allow them to hit him like that. Beardo and I always have this thing with Superman, you know, standing there toe-to-toe exchanging blows. That's not Batman. He can't do that because every little bit slows him down, and all he needs is to be just a little bit slower, and he's dead. And then his career's over, you know, and that's, you know, that's, it just can't go. You can't survive that way if you're going to be Batman.
When his career's over, then he's in the seam. Then you can get him.
Exactly. Woo! That'll be story arc number five.
Batman and Daredevil meet in the seam. Is that
you want to talk PTSD? I mean,
yeah. Both of them. Exactly. Oh, so that's the dream, right? To get your comics made into a Netflix series. Is that?
I mean, if they're gonna do it that well, like,
that'd be bad, yeah.
All right.
Brian can make all the costumes and props.
All right.
That's a lot of work for one man. That's all I'm saying. Cool. So, as we're kind of winding it down here, there's a question I always like to end with. We'll go around the room. We'll start with Andrea. And the question is simple: how do you measure success?
You know, I love creating the art. I mean, I'm not the one drawing or any of that, but I love what we do together as a team. And that's really what the success is, you know, creating a final product of something and getting it out there for people to enjoy. that really is what it's all about.
Cool. How about you, Roberto?
I like being able to have conversations with people who have read it, like especially like people who really like who really get into literature and get a chance to like really like look at what you've written, like for better or for worse, whether they like it or don't. I like being able to talk about the finished product and really get into a conversation about it. So success is continuing to do that and continuing to experience that.
Cool. And I like that answer, and it's kind of the same answer that Tom DeFalco gave when he was on the podcast. And how about you, Ryan?
For me personally, since illustration is my passion, if I can look at it and feel good about it, that's the end. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Short and sweet. I love it. Yep. All right, cool. So for our fans listening at home, where can they find the book online and where can they find you guys online?
You mean finding the book online? Is that's what you're asking?
Yeah, the book and like, you know, are you on Twitter? Can people follow you on Twitter?
Yeah, we are on Twitter. It is Shepherd at Shepherd Caliber. They're the Facebook page for the Shepherd. And then, of course, Caliber Comics website is where you can find us. We're on Comixology, Drive-Thru Comics, Google Books, Kindle. You can go to Amazon and get us there. You can order us through, Diamond. You can get us in your order us through your local comic book store.
And Andrea, would you say it's easier to go through Amazon or to go to your local comic book like shop and have them order it for you?
I think it, you know. I would say probably it's easier to do it through Amazon, but I'm going to say because I support the local comic book stores.
Yeah,
good answer.
I mean that because I love comic book stores. I mean, my God, they're awesome. You know, so yeah. I don't want to do anything to in any way harm that business. So I would say because you can do it, support those local comic book stores. Those people are, you know, creating not just a place where you can buy books and statues and paraphernalia and t-shirts, but they're also a place where you can talk about the things you're passionate about. It's a place where you can gather, you know, and that's worth something. It's worth preserving. I don't want us to get to a place where that's gone. Anyway.
Amen.
I would also recommend going back just a tad here. If you're going to look us up, like look up the Facebook and you look up the Shepherd, probably throw the name Molinari on there. Otherwise, you're going to have a lot of different Shepherd things.
Yeah, I've tried Googling too.
You definitely want to throw Molinari in there. Otherwise, you're going to have a hard time finding it.
Cool. And as usual, all these links will be in the description of the episode.
Yep.
And Ryan, I'm sure you're on DeviantArt somewhere.
Yeah, I don't really use it though. I have Score Art on Facebook, so yeah. Check that out.
Cool. All right. Well, if you guys don't have anything else you'd like to add, I think this is a good place we can put a pin in it.
Sweet.
All right.
Thanks. It was a pleasure. A lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Cool. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely.
No, not a problem. So, as we say each and every week, boys and girls, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week.
All right.